Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Elevate 2021 podcast series. My name is Gerda Muller, and I am your Elevate 2021 host, and so excited to have a special guest here with us today, the lovely Dr. Tess Crawley. Welcome, Tess.
Thank you, Gerda. Always lovely to talk to you, I have to say.
always. So what I'm going to ask you to do, Tess, because obviously I know you pretty well, but there might be a lot of people listening that don't know you that well. So can you introduce yourself to anybody that might be listening? Tell us who you are, what you do, and what it is that drives you to do that.
Sure can. Okay, so I am a clinical and forensic psychologist. I own a practice called the Crawley Clinic, which started in Tasmania, in Hobart, back in 2009. I've since sold the Hobart practice. I have a second arm of the Crawley Clinic, which is now the only real arm of the Crawley Clinic, in Launceston. And I have a team that is spread over Tasmania, and I have some staff members in Melbourne as well, which is where I'm based now. In addition to running the clinic, and it's a multidisciplinary clinic, so we have psychologists, social workers, mental health OT, I think that's all. I've got a provisional psychologist as well on board. So in addition to running the clinic, I am a private practice / business entrepreneur, business coach. So I do a lot of work working with business owners and talking to business owners about all sorts of things to do with coping with the ups and downs of business, the overwhelm, the stress, the fear, as well as the practical side of running a business. I think that's probably, and the main reason I do it, I think, is because I've been where most of my clients are when they come to me, you know, in that terribly isolated and scary place. So, you know, it's become quite the passion work for me, you know, helping people climb out of that horrible hole that they inevitably fall into if they stay isolated.
Yes, business ownership is most certainly a difficult journey, made even more difficult if you do it alone and if you are isolated. So I must say, just listening to that list of stuff, you must be pretty busy, and yet you still are making time to join us at Elevate 2021 this year. So I'm super happy. Yeah.
I'm super excited.
Thanks for putting us in your diary. So obviously you were there last year when we had the virtual Elevate 2020, and your presentation was one of the most popular, I think, based on the feedback. So you are coming back, therefore, of course, because it was popular, I just had to get you back. But tell us, what's going to be your topic for this year?
Yeah, thanks. I am really excited to come. I can't remember the last time I was on a plane, so I'm a little bit excited, I have to say, and staying in a hotel and all. I've got that sort of giddy feeling about coming. So everybody has to behave themselves so that nothing stops me from being there.
Yes.
The topic, I'm going to talk about a concept that I talked about this more in an introductory sort of version of the concept of what is a CEO mindset. Pretty much what I talked about last year. This year I'm advancing it a little, if you like, and talking more about, you know, how to adopt a CEO mindset in uncertain times. People feel that being a CEO means you've got all your shit together, and you know, how can I possibly call myself a CEO or a director or any other kind of grown-up word in my business if I feel like I'm constantly being buffeted about? And we're living in a world where everybody's being buffeted about at the moment. So being able to adopt some of those mindset, or overcome some of those mindset challenges, and really step into that CEO framework in terms of how you look at your business, how you see your role, how you communicate with team and staff and so on like that. It's so important, I think, that business owners understand what all of that means so that they can more confidently adopt that leadership role and stop treating themselves like their business's general dog's body. Yeah. They actually need to step up a little bit more in terms of how they see themselves, because that helps them run their businesses better.
100%. And I think, you know, the topic being a CEO mindset in uncertain times, it is so pertinent right now, because I think for us as helping professionals, who is the main audience at Elevate, already have a difficult time stepping into the CEO mindset. Yeah. Now, bring in uncertain times, uncertain variables, most of which we can't control, it makes it even harder. And it's so easy to be drawn into that operational side of things again, yep, during these times. So I think it's so vital for us to be having this conversation, which I guess also segues nicely into my next question is, when you think about the audience at Elevate, being allied health, mental health professionals, of course, there's team members that might be there, a lot of them are practice owners. What is that top one or two reasons that you think it is important for them as a practice owner to embrace the CEO mindset?
I think first and foremost, this belief that we have to do everything ourselves. The number one mistake I think business owners make is not delegating enough or soon enough. And this belief that we have to do everything ourselves, because there's a whole lot of emotions tied into delegating. You know, we feel guilty and lazy if we're asking somebody else to do something that we could do ourselves. And so because we could do it ourselves, we tell ourselves we should do it ourselves, and we just grind ourselves down to the bone. So, you know, you hear about practice owners up till 11 o'clock at night dealing with admin, working across all their weekends, dealing with admin and paperwork and staffing issues, when they promised themselves when they went into business that they were doing it so they had more time for their family. Yeah. And yet here they are stealing time from their family to continue to do everything themselves. So I actually ran a survey recently asking questions about people's issues with their businesses, and the vast majority of people were saying that their number one concern was time management, and related to that, you know, how to delegate and who to delegate to. So, you know, it is a burning problem. And I think that first issue that really needs to be addressed is this belief that I must do everything myself. It's absolute nonsense. Mm. Absolute nonsense. From right down from therapy assistants who can help us with our wait list instead of feeling we have to take every client ourselves, mm-hmm, right through to students who can help us draft reports. There's so many things that we can do, mm-hmm, that we can delegate, but we don't, because we feel we're going to get in trouble, we're going to get criticised by our peers, we'll get reported to APRA. And of course, none of those things are going to happen, because you're still going to be a professional acting professionally, making ethical decisions. You're just going to share the workload around.
Yeah. There's so many emotional stuff, right, that plays into that, the fear, the guilt, the uncertainty of not knowing. And when there's so much emotional connections to having to engage in certain behaviors, that's when we stay stuck. That's when we stay stagnant, because then we just don't do anything. And then it's 3 years later and they're still staying up at night doing exactly the same thing. So the way that I see what it is that your topic will help as well is really to help practice owners achieve that dream they had when they started, right? That dream of flexibility, of having more time than I had previously while still earning the same money. And, you know, if you don't do this the right way and allow yourself to do things like delegate, then that's never going to happen, and you're not going to have that dream, which is a possibility. It is possible. People do it every day. You're a prime example of that, right? And it's about working through those emotions by stepping into that CEO mindset space. And I guess a lot of people ask, how do I do that? Well, that's what this presentation is going to be all about.
Exactly right. And it's not as difficult as people feel. Like I'm asked, or fear that, you know, I'm asking them to take on a title that they don't deserve. See the term CEO, oh, that's preserved for corporations. What's that got to do with my small little business, especially if I'm a business of one?
Yeah.
And this is why, you know, talking about CEO mindset, I don't care how many people you have below you in your organization, you have to adopt this attitude of knowing when you are in chief operating mode, so doing all the daily responsibilities, and when you must be in that strategic, future-oriented CEO mode of thinking, so that you can make the daily decisions that meet the strategic long-term goals. So it's about understanding the different hats we're required to wear in our businesses.
Yeah.
More than sort of just taking on a mantle. It's not just about a title.
Yeah. And I wonder if you find this as well, that, you know, when people have, for example, when it comes to increasing fees, right? A lot of times people struggle with making the decision, and then they do decide to increase their fees. They go through the process and they go, oh, geez, I should have done that a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, nobody left. Nobody had a tantrum. It was all good. Why was I so worried about it, right? And I think it's very similar with stepping into the CEO mindset, that once a person decides to do it and they start acting from that space, they look back and go, okay, you know, it's actually not as hard as I thought it is. It's actually, you know, it's like this weight is lifted off my shoulders. All these things are now, you know, I've got more possibilities, more opportunities. This is actually a great space to be in.
That's right. It's so true. And I think it comes down to there are so many areas in our businesses where, you know, even, you know, recruiting administrative staff to support you right at the very early stages of your business growth. People put that off for so long because they overestimate what it's going to cost and they underestimate their ability to pay it. And that's, again, linked to their fee structures. There are so many layers to these delays. And, you know, we call it a delegation problem, or we call it a time management problem, or we call it a revenue stream problem. It doesn't matter what label you put on the reasons why you're not stepping into the next stage of your business and getting the help you need. It all starts with how you view yourself and your business and where you see your business going in the future, and then acting accordingly. Basically, it means holding your breath, cross your fingers behind your back, and take the bloody leap and do the thing that's going to help you support your business to stay afloat.
Yeah.
That's scary.
It is, right? But it's doing that thing that we are probably asking our clients to do on a daily basis, and that is to step outside of that comfort zone to take that leap of faith. And a lot of the times it's faith in ourselves that we can do it, right? So we know it's a big ask, but we also know that people can most certainly do it.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
All right. So tell me, next is a more personal question. Mm-hmm. So what failure have you personally experienced in your practice or business that your topic will help our attendees to avoid?
Oh my God, all of them. I've made all of the mistakes. I've had all of the failures, and I still make mistakes and I still have failures. So I think the number one failure I'd say they will avoid is assuming that there are no more failures to be had, because I think that when we talk about failures, it sounds so final and so finite. I think that we try things and it doesn't work out, we learn from it. Mm-hmm. So I think in my business in particular, probably you asked me to pick one, and every time I think I've picked one, another one pops into my head. But the first thing I think is around staffing decisions. And if I think back to the earliest thing I wish I'd done differently, or wish I'd thought about differently, is probably a better way to frame this. I felt I was in such a rush to have my business be the biggest, and what I wasn't conscious of, I got excited. I think I got a bit overexcited about the growth and the potential and all of those things, and the people who wanted to work with me, and all of that stuff was really, really exciting. But I was at the time very, very reactive to on-the-spot decisions without a thought really about the strategic longer-term, how it was going to look, how it was going to play out. So when it comes to staffing now, I'm really encouraging people to think long-term, to think vision around, you know, what do you want your practice to, what do you want your team to feel like? Not how many names do you want on your website? What do you want your team to feel like? And backward engineer from there. So thinking about, you know, people always say, what's better, contractors or employees? And there's no right answer to that. The only right answer is the one that fits your strategic longer term view of how you want your team to feel.
Yeah.
So my team has never been more stable, more happy, more content, more a joy to spend time with than they have since I made a conscious decision to change my thinking about how I recruited, who I recruited, and focus more on culture than on numbers of names on websites. And that was probably the turning point for me. And I remember distinctly in a very difficult time in my business, making that conscious decision when, you know, panic was telling me to recruit desperately fast. Anyone will do, just get bums on seats. Yeah. But I made a very conscious decision to slow that down and get strategic and culture based. So that's probably, I guess, a good example, but I still make mistakes every day. We still as a team have stuff ups every day. In fact, I'm about to message one of my clients telling her I've made a mistake about something and we'll fix that. You know, we all still make mistakes and we all still learn from them. So it's really important to, I use the analogy of watching a toddler learning to walk. You know, if a toddler never fell over, they would never learn to walk properly. So, you know, we all need to fall over every now and then or stumble every now and then.
Mm. Yes, totally agree. Because, you know, that saying, another level, another devil. With each stage of growth, you're going to have challenges. And if you've never faced that challenge before, or you don't have somebody in your corner, such as a mentor or a coach that can tell you what to look out for, you know, it might be another failure, but there's always going to be another challenge and you're going to learn from it. That's the important thing, right? Oh, that's my reminder to say I need to change my flights to somebody's retreat, midwinter retreat. I will have to do that.
I wonder whose retreat that might be.
I wonder. I've got all my reminders going off. Although it's on silent, the alarms reminders will go off. You know, so it's about knowing every stage of growth has an extra challenge. And, you know, that was a great example that you also used, because I think what a CEO does is think strategically, is think long-term, is think vision. Whereas if you're just in operator mode, it's just like there's a client on a wait list, I need to fill this hole and get clients to come be treated right. And biggest mistake ever, we both know it, we've both made it. it's like what is that saying that you need to make this mistake almost, it's like I don't know, there's some other English saying that I can't think of right now. It'll probably come back to me once we're done here, but it's like it's such a common mistake. So I also think, you know, we don't want to give ourselves too much of a hard time as long as we are learning from it. Yes, sometimes there are some lessons that I've personally found I had to learn more than once because I can be a bit stubborn, but you know, eventually it sticks. And you know, what you've spoken about your learning and the fact that you have grown from it, you know, is testament in the fact that this year, of course, your practice is a finalist.
Yes.
Australian Allied Health Awards in, I believe, the team culture category.
That's right.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. I have to say, I am so proud of that, you know, that we are a finalist in that category. And and that's having been a finalist for Psychologist of the Year, I have to say I'm more proud of this being a finalist in this particular category, because it's one of my core values. It has become the core value of my team. Nothing makes me happier than when I hear from my team members, this is the best job I've ever had, or I've never felt so supported, or you know, they're asking me, can we spend more days working with you. You know, this is the culture that has grown out of all of the learnings that that I've made over the years through other team-based decisions. I really understand people's desperate need to recruit at the moment. I think it's understandable, the demand that's in the community right now, and I'm seeing a lot of solo practitioners suddenly swamped with referrals and not knowing which way to turn and making desperate decisions around recruitment that I wish I could hit a pause button for them. I think that they're swamped. So they're stressed out of their, you know, off their heads with the referral numbers they're getting, but they're also now suddenly throwing themselves into team management mode as well. But they don't have time to do that because their caseload is full up to the eyeballs, and so they're spinning, you know, they're just freaking out completely with, I've got so many responsibilities now and I haven't said no to anything yet because I'm scared that it's all going to stop one day and I'll have no referrals again. So there's so many pressures and fears and demands coming at them from every single angle that I, you know, I do understand their desperation, but I encourage them to pause and stop and think, what's the key strategic decision to be made next? By all means, recruit, but recruit smartly.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think you're touching on another important quality of having a CEO mindset, and that is the ability to say no, but also to say no to opportunities. Because people see that as an opportunity to service the waitress, to now expand my practice. But the timing needs to be right. And I can't remember who said this, but someone, a clever person, said that opportunities is like a bus. At the bus stop, there's always another one coming, right? Yes. And you need to know which is the right bus to get on. You need to know.
I think that's true.
And where to get off.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, you know, Richard Branson's advice around say yes to everything and work out the details later. I do agree with that in some sectors, not with staffing. So if you have an opportunity to, run a workshop and you've got no idea what the topic is, but you know that this is going to be really good for your exposure and for your business, by all means, say yes, work out the details later. If you're being asked to recruit someone and your gut is telling you they're not the right fit, don't say yes and work out the details later. Listen to your gut, because you know your gut is telling you they're not the right fit for a reason.
Yes.
So it's what we say no to is as important as what we say yes to. We need to be very strategic and smart in those.
Totally. And I love that you mentioned that, because I think very often when people might be hearing CEO mindset and thinking, oh, that means I need to be really rational and logical. No. And you need to be all that stuff, but you still need to trust the gut.
Yes. And more so. The interesting thing about, you know, entrepreneurs who, you know, you and I are our own worst enemies, and people like us, we're all our own worst enemies, because we go into business thinking we're going to be free, we're going to have all this time, we're going to, blah, blah, blah. We get that sorted out. Then we go, oh, what can I do next? And then we go to that next level. And then we go, oh, now what? And we go to that next level. And as long as we're being strategic, it's great. But we are always at risk of not having as much freedom and flexibility as we thought we were going to have. The point about the CEO mindset as it relates to that is we're actually very creative thinkers. We're very instinctual. We're a bit like fortune tellers in a weird, crazy way, in that we can see in our own industries, we can see what's coming and we can anticipate what's needed in our industry, and we can implement things that support our communities or support our colleagues or our team, because we've got that sort of visionary kind of element to how we see the world and how we see our particular area of expertise. So there's a place for being rational, absolutely. And I'm not saying the flip side is you be irrational, but I do believe 100% that we are time and time again, I'm saying I told you so to clients of mine when they have finally learnt to trust their instincts. And that definitely plays out in staffing, but it plays out in lots of ways.
Yeah.
And I think that we aren't very good at listening to our gut initially, but we get better at it the more we trust ourselves to make the right decision and the right choice, and we listen to that inner voice that's guiding us. If we listen to that instead of all the shoulds, we'll do a much better job.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so tell me then, I mean, we've touched a bit on this, but what is that one thing, if you could go back in time in our magic time traveling machine, what is the one thing that you would do differently in your
practice? I would have got support sooner. I would have got support a lot sooner. You know, I'm constantly in awe of new practice owners, and I've had a few of them now, brand new practice owners who come smartly to whether it's me or you or whoever and say, I'm opening a practice, I know I'm going to need some help getting this right, I'm in. And I just think, wow, you know, I wish when I started private practice, similar to when you did, you know, it was a different landscape, and finding support and help was much harder. Being in Hobart, I mean, we're talking about we weren't really pre-Facebook, but we were certainly pre-using social media as a tool for support and connection professionally. And, you know, so there were the only people really around were clinical supervisors who have a very different take.
Yeah.
And they were supportive, and I did get some good mm-hmm. business advice, but it wasn't the same as getting proper business coaching. And so I wish I'd had access to that sooner. So those people coming into business now, you've got access to it. It's here. It doesn't have to be me. It doesn't have to be Gerda. It's here. There are more and more people offering this as a service. Find the person who you feel is the right cultural fit for you, and mm-hmm. and invest in your business in that way, because you will. The mistakes that I've made over and again, the mistakes that you've made, the mistakes that so many of us have made, have actually fed into what lessons we can teach, as well as, you know, what skills we can share.
Yeah, I can so much relate to that. I mean, when I started my practice in 2007, I didn't even know there was such a thing such as business coaching.
No.
Who knew that even existed, right?
I didn't.
And when I now know what business coaching mentoring does, I think I was a fool, right? I wish I had it. I was 3 years in before I met the first business coach ever. That changed my life, really, because it changed the trajectory of my business, which is life-changing, right?
Yeah.
And it's made such a difference. And when I see new practice owners, I just want to tell them, I know it's an investment of time and money, but it is so, so worth it. Because even in my book, I answer that question. If I could go back, and my thing was, I would hire a business coach day dot, because it would have made my life so much easier.
Oh, so much easier. And I think the traps that you fall into when you're learning by doing, there's nothing wrong with learning by doing. You learn some really good lessons, but the traps that you can fall into when you're learning by doing on your own is the number one trap really is that sustained isolation and feeling that you have to know all the answers, especially for your team. Feeling that you're the boss, therefore you should know the answers, you should be responsible for everything, you should be doing all of the things. And that's a really nasty mindset trap to find yourself stuck in. I see lots of practice owners, when a staff member leaves, their first response is to say, oh, well, then I have to take on all their clients because I don't have anyone else. It's like, no, stop right there. Stop right there. You know, then an admin staff member leaves, oh, well, then I have to sit on reception because I don't have a new admin team member yet. Well, hang on. You've just taken on everyone's clients, and now you're going to sit on reception, and you've got your own caseload, and you're trying to manage your stuff, and you've got a family or a partner or a pet or a life. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible to live successfully and sustainably as a business owner, let alone keep your business afloat, if you don't start coming out of that isolation, that belief that you have to do everything yourself, that it is your responsibility to plug all the gaps, and just step back from that. Get some support around you. The nice thing I feel with especially the group programs I run is seeing that connection and seeing people's eyes at various stages of business experience. Their eyes sort of pop a little bit when they realize, oh, I'm not the only one who has experienced that, or I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important. I'm very upfront, you know, with my Like a Boss crew. That's my top tier of business coaching. I tell them, we've made a major billing stuff up in my practice recently, which we're addressing now. And the great thing is that we've identified lots of good things have come out of it. But it was a mistake that had been made. And, you know, I shared that with them. And I remember one of the girls saying, wow, you know, thanks so much. Thank you so much for sharing that to us, because I was demonstrating that I'm not perfect either. You know, I drop the ball sometimes too. And it's not the dropping of the ball. It's how we're going to pick it up and how we're going to run even further with it now that we've identified the issue.
Yeah, love that. And it's amazing that once you allow yourself to have the support, and I think, you know, we are so naughty as helping professionals. We are so good at doing the helping, but accepting it is such a big challenge for us.
Huge.
But once people allow themselves to get that business help and support, and they come into programs, groups, or even in a conference, I remember last year's conference community was just so supportive and amazing. And what I really love is to see how supportive our people actually are. Yes, I'm sure there's people that's not into that type of thing, but to see how giving people are, how generous they are, you know, not knowing one another from a bar of soap, it just seems of helping, providing support, giving advice and input and recommendations. Not that I would encourage anybody to take business advice off social media.
No,
but it's the support, right?
That's right.
Support that is so important, and I just love to see our allied health and mental health community starting to support one another in much better ways, which is really, really great.
It is good. It is. It's really nice. Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, aligned to that is the, you and I've both talked a lot in the past about, you know, developing affiliate networks with other business owners around you so you can support each other, but also, you know, cross referral, all that sort of stuff. And what I'm seeing now playing out, you know, with the demand that's going on in the community, but also the acceptance of telehealth within the community, I'm now seeing practices now starting to say, you know, happy to help you with your caseload via telehealth if that's of any benefit, or so-and-so saying, I've got a client with this condition, can anybody help? Telehealth would be fine. And and we're seeing a lot more collaboration clinically as well now, which is really exciting for me. I think that I see the future as, it is a very stressful time, but I do see some hope for that, you know, that connection.
Yeah. 100%. All right. So next question. Interesting one. What is one of the things you are currently researching or focusing on?
Dare I say it? Oh, my God.
I'm very curious.
I know. Well, I do have a secret. Currently, right this very minute, I've been researching, you know, business owners' struggles and what they're, and how that plays out, which is, you know, I do have some things on offer at the moment which support those struggles around the CEO mindset stuff and so on. But I'm also very concerned, I mentioned, you know, very concerned about the pressure that mental health professionals are under at the moment, given the demand in the community. And so we are currently, I've got the beginnings of a board. I've got lawyers actioning, putting paperwork in places that it has to go to create a not-for-profit. And I'm building a not-for-profit, I don't know what you call it, company. I guess it's a company, a not-for-profit. Anyway, we'll call it a not-for-profit with the mission of supporting, of connecting private, sorry, I'll start again because I'm actually stumbling on my words because it's a bit of a secret. So we're building a not-for-profit with the mission to support the mental health of mental health professionals, because there are a lot of barriers to mental health professionals getting their own early intervention in particular. You and I've talked about this before, I know. If I needed mental health support, who am I going to ask? Because I know everybody and you're in the same boat.
Yeah.
So how do we find somebody who has enough experience, isn't in my network, which is bloody huge, and is available? So I'm building a portal where people can do exactly that. They can find someone with enough experience, they can find someone who's not in their known network, who is available to support them, and it'll be for mental health professionals to seek early intervention mental health support from experienced clinicians. So it's that's what I'm currently working on, so that's big. And it is something that I am passionate about. I am very concerned about the industry at the moment. I'm concerned about all these practice owners who are, you know, spinning like tops because the demand is so huge. I'm concerned about the risk for burnout, both of them and team members in particular, if the support structures internally aren't right because the practice owner hasn't quite got their head around how to do that.
Yeah,
it's a scary time. I think I'm concerned. We'll see. You know, a loss of workforce capacity when we're already challenged in workforce capacity with very few people coming through to replace the people who are moving out of the industry. So that's the story behind. You had to ask the question. That was a big story.
I feel so privileged. Did we get the inside scoop on that?
The inside scoop. I know. So I'm hanging out to be able to, you know, put visuals to the story. So I haven't talked about it publicly. Some of my clients know about it, but I haven't talked about it publicly because I have no visuals to put with it. What's that? We're out of time.
My phone just randomly started playing music. It is so excited about this initiative. Last Christmas by Wham. It's not like a totally appropriate song, but
it's just it's fine.
I didn't touch it, I promise. It's like, well done. It's a great initiative and thank you for sharing it here.
That's okay. So watch this space. There'll be more, you know, once I've got more, you know, got all the legals sorted out, then I can start getting really loud and excited about it. Obviously, there'll be a lot of media attention. Once we get to that point, there'll be, you know, gunning for things like celebrity ambassadorships and all sorts of things. Like I'm pushing for this to be a real big thing because I feel really big about it. And making it not-for-profit makes it easy for people to be part of it, looking at charitable status as well, so people can donate for clinicians who find themselves in dire straits. You know, I find, you know, for example, you know, some practices in New South Wales during the bushfire last year who were nearly wiped out. You know, they have big challenges that we face helping our communities, and there's very little help in return for us individually. And we saw that with finance packages during COVID, where a lot of sole traders really missed out on any financial support, even though they were struggling.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see, you know, the longer term effects.
Yes, with the industry. That's what worries me.
You know, because if I think I work a lot with large group practice owners, and they've had to like be switched on and you know, lead during COVID. And it's like, there's no end as yet. It's just ongoing and ongoing and ongoing. And it's like, when are we going to have a time to actually stop and just go, it's going to be okay. It's as if when there's no deadline, I feel there's hope, where currently it's like, we don't know how long this is going to last. And, you know, the potential for burnout and all that stuff is really concerning. So I think, again, you know, great initiative. Mm. It's also why, you know, my heart is in stuff like Elevate, to create opportunities for people to get re-inspired, reconnect with other people, get re-motivated, hear that it's okay to fail, right? That it's okay to stuff up, that it's okay to delegate, that it's okay to take 2 weeks off. The practice will be fine, right? You'll be fine if you take time for yourself. It's so important. And I guess that's what me and you advocate for a lot and fight for, really, for our people, is for them to say that it's okay for me to sit back and just let go and relax and take a breath and do what I need to do. So important.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so tell me, what did you love most about being part of last year's Elevate experience? So you've already had the experience. A lot of people might be listening. They've never come to Elevate. What did you love most about being part of Elevate?
I loved the coming together of people, all the speakers who we all came together to really help business owners. There's so little in the mental health sector in particular, there's so little around how we be better at the business of mental health. And I just really felt that it was something special. I felt very, very privileged to be part of it. I really did enjoy knowing that the stuff I talked about hit a chord. Like struck a chord. That was deeply satisfying to me. It's nice when you're feeling passionate about something to discover that it's actually not just you being, you know, stuck in your own head and thinking your own thoughts, but it actually resonates with other people as well. So that was really special. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Me too. All right. So tell me, if there's somebody listening to us today, or they may be watching the video on YouTube or on Facebook, and they're like in two minds, do I come? Do I not come? Obviously this year we have in-person tickets available. You know, if that's a scary thought for you, though, I'll be there. You know, there's a virtual option as well. And people are going, do I not commit, whether that's in-person or virtually? What would your input be to them to help them make a decision about whether to attend or not?
I think just do it. I think that it's such a rare opportunity, like I said, you know, to get this level of input into your business in one big chunk. And, you know, and God, it counts towards your professional development. There's so many reasons why this is important. And we don't very often get professional development around our business ownership in mental health. But just the collegiality itself is so special. So if you can get there in person, absolutely go. But a virtual ticket, last year everyone was virtual and it was an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. So it's just a no-brainer. If you're looking at it and you're weighing it up and down, well, clearly it interests you. Mm. Just do it. Absolutely.
Totally agree. Just do it. That's the motto for today. Well, thank you so much for
having me.
Talking to me and talking to all our potential and already booked elevators. We're going to work really hard to make it an amazing event, whether that's whether people are coming in person or virtually. I think we did a pretty good job last year for the very first one, so this year is going to be even better. I look forward to seeing you there and catching up and hearing about how the new initiative is going by the time you get there.
Yes, I know. Gosh. Yes, who can say? Very exciting. Thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to see you in September because it's been a long time too.
It has. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Bye. Thanks, Gerda. Bye.